845-2155. WSAU feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
All right, the government has been listening to this program and decided that it's about time for it to get serious and bring some real information to the people. Quit kidding around. So they've sent the official representative, Congressman Sean Duffy, into the studio to set us straight. Good morning, man. How are you?
When we say the government's listening, are we talking the NSA? How's it going, Seth?
What don't they listen to at this point? All right, so you're back from Wacky Town for a while. How's it going?
Yeah.
You got anything interesting you want to reveal to us? Any great revelations?
We're back over the Easter week here, which is actually nice. It's been a long stretch. It's good to be back in spring in Wisconsin. I didn't realize the storm was coming. I woke up and I was like, oh my God, there's it's the snow side, but
I know we were talking about the family. We were out in short sleeves yesterday.
I know,
and I on purpose ignored all the weather alerts that I get from the Channel 9. I said I don't need to look at this. Everything's fine, you know. So what if it's rainy a little bit? Big deal. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh look, that's an inch and a half of snow. And I'm at the bottom of my driveway. This is going to be interesting.
See, at least you got the weather alerts. I didn't check at all. I was totally down under, and I woke up to a nice surprise. But last week we had a pretty exciting week in Congress. We were dealing with budgets. Yeah. Because, as you know and your listeners know, we have $17 trillion in change of national debt. And this isn't getting any better. I know this has kind of fallen off the front page, and it's not as hot of a topic as it was in previous years, but it isn't any better, Seth. We've gone down from a deficit, which is how much we borrow every year,
right,
from $1.5 trillion, and it's come down to about $600 billion this year.
Yeah, we're still going in the hole, though.
But what we saw that would happen. We knew the deficits were going to come down. But we also see them going back up again starting in 16. We'll be back at trillion-dollar deficits in just a couple of years. And so we have to get this under control. Now, we in the House put out a budget that, again, balances in 10 years.
Now, you're talking about the Ryan budget?
Right. So, yeah, the Ryan budget is the House budget because he chairs the committee. Balances in 10 years, reforms how much we spend in discretionary spending, reforms our mandatory spending programs, and brings us to a point of balance.
Now, you heard all the criticism that came out about the budget, calling it a joke, calling it ridiculous, calling it an anti-conservative plan. You heard all the criticism, right? I'm not dropping something new on you, am I?
No, I did. But listen, it's hard to lead. And it's easy to sit on the sidelines and say, listen, you could have done more, you should have done more. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is we have to be responsible as well. And say, how do you get to a point of balancing in 10 years and then working on paying down the debt and still meet the obligations that you've made to the citizenry?
Right.
And there has to be a balance in that. There's some who say, listen, slash and burn. I don't think that's the right approach. I do think you have to be responsible, especially if you want to get reelected, because I think that's the right way to do it. But listen, can I make one other point too on how bad this is?
Sure.
As
before
I say,
I fire
we should
up.
Do it responsibly. You start launching bombs at me.
All right.
You can hit me from the right chair, and I got Pat Tom to the left. But listen,
who?
So right now we pay $230 billion a year in interest on the debt. $230 billion.
Mm-hmm.
All right, our military spending is about $550 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In 10 years. This is the president's numbers. Interest on the debt will be $880 billion. We will spend more on interest on the debt, just servicing the debt, not paying it off, just paying the interest on the debt.
Right.
We'll spend more every year on that, paying interest, than we do on our military. And so when I deal with liberals and they're saying, well, listen, you know, spend more, borrow more, you look down the road, how many bridges can you build? How many poor people can you feed? How many schools can you build? How many sick people can you care for in just the interest payments that are going to go out?
Right.
And they don't seem to understand that connection between interest payments and the impact it's going to have as we look down the road for American budgeting.
Right. The two issues with the budget that I had. All right. First of all, I disagreed with anyone coming out And I, you know, love her to death, but what's her name came out and, you know, called it a joke.
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin came out and called it a joke. That was an inappropriate thing to do. She should not have called it a joke. Say, I don't like it. Say, you know, it doesn't fit the conservative baseline. I understand. That's fine. But to call it a joke was inappropriate. But there were two things that I didn't like. First of all, 2 years of increased spending before we started decreased spending. Is that correct? Am I understanding that properly? That's the way it was proposed. That's the way it was explained.
So there's a couple of things that happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spending will still increase, but it increases at a lower rate.
Okay.
Right? So I want to be honest.
Tapping the brakes.
When people say we're cutting spending, oftentimes they're saying we're cutting the growth of spending.
Right.
So honestly, the way you get to a point of balance is you look at these programs and you still allow them to slightly grow,
mm-hmm.
but at a far lower rate than current projections.
Okay.
We do that. And then on the mandatory, so this is on the discretionary side.
Right.
You can't balance the budget in discretionary spending. It's only about 40% of the budget. The mandatory side, which is Medicare, Medicaid, interest on the debt, it's mm-hmm. those places that have explosive growth that we have to reform that's going to save our budget in the future. And we reform Medicare in a way that actually makes it sustainable. The Congressional Budget Office looks at the way we've done it,
mm-hmm.
and we've said, listen, if you want to keep traditional Medicare, right. you can. If you want to go into this new program, you can. And it's a way better program for seniors in the future. So.
All right, so the issues.
You're
still
blowing me off. He's like, yeah.
No, I'm not blowing you off. I just got to get to the.
He's swatting me.
No, if I were that, I'd just turn your mic off. No.
And he would, too.
The issue is, okay, that we we'll get your headphones put on so that you can, for whatever reason, punish yourself by listening to Tom. Can you hear?
Yeah,
you
God
hear?
Forbid that he would want questions that, you know.
Now I can hear Tom. There we
okay.
go.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. Anyway, so the issue of spending going up. Now, the criticism of the left has been, well, they're not cutting spending. They're only cutting the growth of spending. That has been a Republican / conservative criticism of liberal budgets. I've heard it. Okay, so I'm not going to.
No.
Yes, it has.
You can't give me one budget where they've cut the growth of spending at all. The spending launches
when we've
in the president's budget,
in the Senate's budget.
In the House, in the liberal House budget and the Democrat budget in the House, they all spend and tax and borrow more.
But when they come out and they try and say, hey, this is a tax break. We're doing this break. We're doing that break. It's a lie. It's not a tax break. It's a reduction in the amount of tax increase, that kind of thing.
Right.
So what I'm saying is one argument, if we're going to say slowing down the growth is not a cut, if we're going to use that argument against the Democrats and against the liberals, it's got to be used against us as conservatives as well.
Sure.
Right, that's all I'm saying.
But my point is, get yourself on track to balance, okay? And this is a way that you can still meet your obligations.
Get in the right direction.
And start to reform it, and you do it in 10, and you do it in 10 years.
Okay, that's the other thing.
Right.
In 10 years, how do I know that between now and over the next decade, the various members of Congress that will be coming in and out are going to adhere to the plan that is put forth now? That's what I don't
trust. You don't.
That's my complaint.
But then you're complaining about your Constitution because no Congress is bound by a previous Congress, right? I mean, never are you bound by the Congress that came before you. So
but
you have
are.
To understand that if we put us on a trajectory to balance, and you get you change the House and have a whole bunch of liberals in there, they can undo what we've done.
Okay.
Just like we're going to undo Obamacare when we get the shot and we take over the presidency.
But then that's the argument.
See? There we go.
That's the argument for slash and burn. Balance the damn budget now. Get a balanced budget amendment and go after it and make it hurt, but get it balanced
now. Yeah, but
now.
Like he said, that never gets through the Senate.
It's political
suicide. And that never gets through the White House at this point. You've heard the criticism from the right now. The criticism from the left.
Oh, gosh.
Most of the criticism from the left is saying that the slowing in spending or the cuts, whatever you want to call them, are aimed mostly at the people that are going to need the programs most, and that the quote unquote fat cats are getting protected in this budget more than the people who actually need the programs.
Yeah, well, and that's absolutely untrue. What we do is we reform the tax code in a way where we take out a lot of the loopholes and the preferences and the deductions that most of the fat cats, as you'd call them, they take advantage of. So you have more transparency in the tax code, a fairer tax code.
No, I'm talking about programs like food stamps and programs
So what we do in food stamps, I think that's important because I'm one, Tom, who maybe have I have a compassionate side. I think the churches and the community should first try to help people in their community. I think there's a space, though, for the federal government to be involved and help folks. But you look at the growth of the program, we look at reforms like this. We say, if you're an able-bodied adult of sound mind, sound body, you can go to work, you don't have any kids, you either have to get a job, you have to get job training, or you have to volunteer. You can't be 32 years old and single and a strong, buff, and tough kid and sit at home and collect food stamps.
That's the argument you're making and your side is making.
Those are the reforms we make, Tom.
But the truth of the matter is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it may be the majority, but it's a large chunk of the people who are on food stamps have jobs, whether they're veterans, whether they're the working poor, whatever.
But I'm not talking about them. So what I'm saying is there's people who are – you want to narrowly target these programs to help people who are in the most need. Because if you don't do that, Tom, the growth of this stuff is so large that if you have a bankrupt government, if you have a debt crisis, the first people who are hurt are the poorest and the most vulnerable among us. And so if you care about the people that you say you care about, then you also have to care about sustainability and budgeting. Because on the current course, there's no way that you're going to be able to care for these folks 10 or 15 years from now. So then you should join with me and go, okay, as a liberal, you would go, I'm going to tell you how I want to balance the budget. The progressive budget that they put out, it has trillions of dollars in new taxes and far more spending, and it never balances, which endangers the very people that they say they want to help. The Democrat budget that they put out in the House, they have a whole bunch of budgets. We put out the president's budget. That got 2 Democrat votes, by the way, only. It did get 2 this time.
Nice.
They put out a progressive budget.
Huge increase.
Even the Democrat budget never balances. And so it's hypocritical to come in and say, borrow and spend today and help the needy today.
Absolutely.
When you know darn well tomorrow you can't afford to help them.
Yeah, there won't be
any
money.
That's unacceptable. So if you'd have more credibility if you said, listen, I'm going to tell you how much I'm going to tax all Americans, because there's not enough money to just tax the fat cats who you reference. There's not enough money there. We look at the numbers. You got to tax the fat cats, and you have to tax every hard-working middle-class family in our area to pay for all the programs that you're advocating for.
All right, I tell you what, let's do. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll allow Tom to ask more questions. Just because it's entertaining.
Giddy up.
WSAU, we're here with Sean Duffy. We will be back in mere moments.
The news, talk, and Rush Station. News Talk 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Welcome back to Feedback, 715-845-2155. We'll take phone calls after the next break. Special guest in the studio with us again, Mr. Sean Duffy. Thank you, by the way. I know you're here kind of on vacation with the Easter break, but thanks for stopping by talking to us.
Thanks for having me out. There is no vacation, by the way. I get my week back, but I get to get out and see people and keep the pulse on what's going on in the district. So
Congressman's always on duty, right?
Always on duty.
All right, so let's talk about the last time you were here. We'll do calls next break. Last time you were here, we were talking about the committee that you're on, talking about keeping track of all of our financial records. And there were some bills and so forth that were proposed to kind of limit that. But there was another thing that I read about, that there was a little bit of a discovery of some unpleasantness in these committees. The name of the committee again, sorry.
This is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB.
Okay. There was allegations of sexism and racism within this organization?
Yeah.
All right, what's that about?
So first, this is, for anyone who doesn't know, this is a new agency that was created in Dodd-Frank, and it's a wonderful name, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It makes you feel warm and fuzzy. It's kind of like the Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't agree with these agencies when they start? The bottom line is they grow and are very powerful and have a huge impact on American life. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which we've talked about, they're collecting every credit card in America.
Right. Inappropriately so.
Yeah, they're targeting small financial institutions that are making it more difficult to get loans out onto main streets of America, main streets in central and northern Wisconsin. But what they've done recently is the work environment is so toxic in there. that we've seen allegations come out of racism and sexism, where the way they evaluate employees at the CFPB, you see white males mm-hmm. get the highest score ratings, and minorities and women with systematically far lower scoring on the review process at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We had one attorney step forward and as a whistleblower and make these allegations. And then they actually retaliated against her, isolated her, removed her from her position of leadership. Actually, the director of the CFPB, Richard Cordray, called her at night and told her to get her attorneys to back off. I mean, listen, this kind of stuff is unheard of, that you have in 2014 racism and sexism in an agency like this. And we've been holding hearings trying to bring some sunlight to the allegations and see what's true and what's not. And basically the CFPB has been non-responsive. They sent out press releases. We'll come in. We'll talk about it. Let's fix this. But in the end, they continue with their punishment to those who shed light on what's happening within the agency.
With allegations like this, how do you compel those individuals who are accused of this behavior to give information and testimony before Congress? Well, how do you get them to do that?
So we have employees who are coming forward, but many of them are scared. But the employees who are perpetrating these acts, we ask them to come in and testify in front of our committee, which is financial services, and I'm on the oversight committee for financial services. And if they don't come in on their own, we subpoena them. We mm-hmm. bring them in via subpoena. But listen, there was one area, one functioning unit that was mostly African-American. And the phrase that was used for this group was the plantation. I mean, this stuff is unacceptable. It's unheard of. And this is an agency, Seth, by the way, that there's you have banks that buy loans from dealerships, right. Car loans, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And if they buy all these loans, they don't see the customers. They're just buying the loans.
Right.
They have a relationship with the customers. Mm-hmm. Don't see race, don't see sex.
Right.
If a bank who's purchased these loans has a disproportionately high number of folks in a zip code that's traditionally African American or Hispanic that have higher interest rates.
Right.
They make an allegation of racism, disparate impact. Now, the bank doesn't even know these people, has never had a relationship with them.
Right.
And this agency will make accusations of racism. When you look at what they're doing, the racism is within their own agency.
All right. Now, I am not one to want to give the Obama administration an opportunity to put a feather in their cap. All right. But if the Obama administration actually cared about equality, actually cared about the issues that they've brought forward as the emotional hot buttons when they're campaigning, then this would be a great opportunity from a high part of the White House to come in hard and furious on an allegation of racism and sexism within one of their own federal agencies, and put a lot of light on it, hold those responsible up, and if they were criminal behavior, prosecution and jail time. If it was simply breaking the rule, fire them.
Yeah.
No government pension, hey, we'll get you another cushy job. Make an example out of these people if the administration actually cared about the things they said when they were campaigning.
This is a softball pitch to the president that he can knock out of the park. Now, I'm not sure he's going to do that, Seth. I sent the president a letter because I get concerned. I said, listen, Mr. President, I know you said you didn't know about Fast and Furious. I know,
right.
I know you didn't know about the IRS.
Sure.
And I know that you didn't know about Benghazi. So just to be clear, there's racism and sexism at the CFPB. Just so you know,
right.
The pitch is coming and you can knock it out of the park. He hasn't responded to me yet.
How long has it been since the letter's been?
I sent it a week ago today. So I'm waiting.
No response.
I go to the mailbox every day waiting
Listen,
for his response.
Listen, Sean, he's a very busy man. There's 18 holes of golf that have got to be played, and there's some basketball that's got to be played. So you just chill just a little bit. But you should probably wait 2, 3, 4 months.
I'll go back to the mailbox after we get off the show, Seth.
Oh,
But listen, this stuff is important because it's good governance stuff. And you know what? The president should have his actions meet with his words and help us clean up this agency.
I'm not arguing that he shouldn't, but I would imagine that getting letters, snarky letters from an opposition member of the House of Representatives is probably not high on his list of being
Who
responded.
Who said snarky?
The way he described it sounded snarky to me.
Were you snarky?
Maybe a little bit. But you know, listen. But it goes to a whole other space of working together in government. When you have people with different views, different opinions, the way you get things done is you build relationships. And I've said this on this show before. The president doesn't have a relationship with Republicans in the House or the Senate. He doesn't have relationships with Democrats in the House or the Senate. And you know, you even look at this equal pay issue that came up for women, which we all support equal pay for women. I mean, this was a political rally, not trying to go, how do we build a consensus around trying to find out how you can actually hold employers who are discriminating on the pay issue with women? We can hold them accountable. Instead, it was a political bomb throwing session.
But when you say
instead of bringing people together, and that's not how you build a collaborative effort around legislative changes.
When you say we all agree that there should be equal pay for women, there are some on your side that don't even agree that the issue is even there, that it exists.
Well, it does. It exists in the White House as well. I mean, that you have a White House that pays women.
You listen to right wing talk radio these days, Seth?
Oh,
they're
Lord.
All saying that it doesn't exist, it's
not.
A myth,
no,
that it's a canard.
Stop that. No, they're not.
But you got to look, and I mean, the White House pays women less. They pay 88% of what men make. And you got to drill down and go, is this because of ours? I mean, what's the reason for that? And is it discrimination? And if it is discrimination, we need laws in the books to make sure that you can't pay, you know, someone less because of sex.
I hate to do this. We got to take a break. We're going to do the break. We're going to take care of some news and some other issues. We'll be right back. WSAU, Wisconsin Morning News.
Get breaking news from the WSAU newsroom straight to your cell phone. Text NEWS to 39327 and you'll always be up to date. From AM 550, FM 99.9 and WSAU.com.